I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. They're pretty simple folks, Carolyn and John, in a collection of new songs by Amy Mann that detail the ups and downs of their relationship. The two meet at a state fair in Virginia and hit the road together.
The king of the jailhouse and the queen of the road think sharing the burden will lighten the load.
Amy Mann's new album is titled The Forgotten Arm. It maintains a high standard that she set for her own writing, this time in a concept album that's set in the early 70s, but this is dark. It's a romance novel with the covers torn off. Amy Mann is here with me in the studio. We invite you to join us. We're talking about songwriting and storytelling. How important are the lyrics to you? Is that what you're listening for, or is the music, the melody, more important? Are you one of those people who wants to hear a story in a song or just let the whole thing wash over you? Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Amy Mann's here with me in the studio. Welcome to The Connection. Nice to have you here.
Thank you so much.
You begin your story of Carolyn and John in a place, I guess, that's pretty familiar to you, the State Fair in Virginia.
Yeah. Well, I sort of wanted them to, I had this idea about these two people who meet, and I wanted him to be a boxer because I kind of had that image, and so I was trying to come up with how would these two people encounter each other, and then I had the notion that maybe he would be doing exhibition boxing at a fair, and also the idea of them meeting in an amusement park, with that kind of cheap glamour,
Do you remember that feeling, though, of being at a park like that, and the carnies or the performers would come in, and we'd all kind of feel like they came in, they were really cool, and then they left, and we were stuck there.
Yeah, exactly. It's that sort of white trash glamour. Yeah, that sort of carny and the whole ballyhoo and everything. It's,
Is that where you started with the idea of the story, or was there a song somewhere else in this album that you thought, I can use this. I can go forward or backwards with a story.
The song
this.
Was pretty much King of the Jailhouse, and that had such very specific images for me. And at that point, I kind of backtracked and tried to put this, the story together. Where would they meet? What would happen? How would their relationship progress?
And when you stitch together, I call it a concept album. Is that a reasonable way of describing it?
Yeah.
Do you do it in a way where anything can be taken out of it and listened to in context, like a moment in a relationship?
Yeah, I think the idea of a concept album for me is so broad. There is a story. It's not really set in stone. There's not great plot points that have to be hit in each song, and mostly it's songs about it's songs about the subtext of their relationship. There's not an enormous amount of detail. It's not like a musical.
Now, these two have been on the road only a short period of time in their relationship. I want to listen to the fourth cut on here, going through the motions, and already. Something isn't right with the relationship.
Yeah.
You don't give them much of a chance.
At this point they're already separated. He's gone off to try to get help for his drug problem. And, she thinks, well, that's the end, that's great. So now everything's fine. And then she talks to him and realizes that, something isn't right.
Something isn't right. Starts already.
Going Through the Motions is the name of the song. It's from Amy Mann's new disc, The Forgotten Arm. And one of the kind of fun games that you play when you have characters that take you all the way through a story over that period of time is, or for the listener, is like, okay, who's talking now?
Mm-hmm.
Was that difficult for you? I'm going to be the voice of the guy now. I'm going to be the voice of the girl. I'm going to be the narrator because you're all three, right?
I don't think so. And you know what? It's also they have kind of the same story. You know, I mean, they have this very, I hate to use this terminology, but they have this very codependent relationship. You know, they run off together because they think that's going to solve something in their life. And so, you know, his sort of focus of, you know, his outside obsession is drugs and alcohol, and hers is focus is him. So, you know, they both are trying to, you know, they're both trying to sort of, once they realize the kind of unhealthy attachment they have to these outside things, I mean, they're both trying to deal with that in some way. But, you know, so it often becomes, I mean, it doesn't even really matter who's talking. It could be either one of them for certain songs.
Yeah, I got that sense where. But part of that is that, and I see it all the way through, there isn't a real bad person here. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
it's not he's
guy.
Such a jerk or she's such a bad person. Yeah. It's just, you know, they're both kind of struggling. And I got the impression that you did that on purpose. You didn't turn one of them into the...
Yeah, well, that's how I feel about people. I mean, I do know, you know, I know a good handful of drug addicts and alcoholics, and I certainly know people who have relationships with those people too and struggle with their own problems and their own craziness and their own obsessions or whatever. And yeah, I mean, you know, I definitely feel like, in general, everybody does the best they can with what they have.
But in general, we're always pretty judgmental when it comes to looking at relationships, right?
Yeah.
I mean, we pick sides pretty easily.
I think it's sort of, you know, it's just easier on everybody if you try to have compassion for other people. And in that way, you know, I mean, everybody's got their stuff and everybody's trying.
Let's squeak in the first part of another one of the songs. She Really Wants You. Where are we now in the odyssey of Carolyn and John?
This is when they've sort of split up, and I think that he's kind of in that mode where he thinks, you know, he feels judged by her, so that they've kind of split up, and it's really a commentary on. He's kind of has this posture of, you know, I don't need you, and it's sort of going like, well, you know, I think that if you really thought she wanted you, you'd be right there.
You know, I was thinking of concept albums, Amy, and thinking of Sgt. Pepper's, and sort of got me into a Beatles mode. And at the beginning of that, I had this flash of the Beatles cut of, you know, she goes downstairs, the daughter's not there. I don't know, did you, if you reach back that far to ideas of stories that are linked together through songs in a concept album?
Wait a minute, did I lose my mic?
There you go.
I don't think that's conscious, but, you know, I obviously grew up on that stuff. So I think, you know, those kind of songwriting templates are probably in my mind. And I have to say that was one of my favorite songs when I was, you know, 8 years old or, you know, however old I was when I got a hold of that record. And just the, you know, I was really charmed by, you know, at 8 years old, the having this picture of this little story and, you know, like, what's going on? Like, what is, I mean, it, you know, it's like it's sort of a picture into these people's lives. And it's interesting to have a few details and then to kind of, you know, go like, well, what's happening?
You well, know, that's like, what you do here. You're not giving us the whole story. We get to fill in the characters a little bit, right?
And then you get a picture. You know, you see this guy in his pajamas at 3 p.m. and you know, and then you kind of like, there's, you sort of know the story at that point.
Is it easier when you are linking one story through different songs? Does the writing come any easier to you?
It is, and I really do like that. And I did find this experience. I thought that was really fun for me because I, you know, tend to be. I mean, I'm fascinated by like a certain kind of person and a certain sort of dynamic between people, and I like to explore that, you know, more than just in within the space of just one song.
Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. Amy Mann is here with me. Don't take it from me. She is generally regarded to be one of the top songwriters of her generation. She uses words beautifully. She tells stories well in songs. In this case, she's doing it over the course of an album, a concept album called The Forgotten Arm. We're talking about songwriting and storytelling and how important that is for you in the music that you listen to. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. Dick Gordon, this is The Connection.
You look like a perfect fit for a girl in need of a turn.
That's the voice of Amy Mann. The song is Save Me. Save Me from the soundtrack of the movie Magnolia, nominated for a Grammy and an Academy Award. And I'm wondering when you listen to that and think where you are with The Forgotten Arm, is there a similar kind of step ahead that you're doing in the storytelling and the songwriting? Because this was, Save Me was a part of a larger body of of your work, which ended up being the narrative for a whole film.
Yeah, it's interesting because, well, the way that Magnolia sort of came to be was different than really just writing a song to a finished movie. Because
in a way that the music came first, didn't it? P.T. Anderson took that and said, I'm making a movie.
Exactly. A lot of the music came first or sort of concurrently and kind of based on conversations that the two of us had about the different, you know, the individual things we were working on. It was just kind of, we were doing the same sorts of things and writing about the same sorts of things, and you know, then it kind of just meshed as it went along. But it's interesting because sort of having done that definitely informed the way I wrote this record, which was almost as like a soundtrack to a kind of an imaginary movie. I think that's probably helped by the fact that the plot is, you know, sort of a road story, and there's a lot of, you know, a lot of road movies to kind of draw on, you know, to have, you know, those pictures of, you know, whatever, like Badlands or Tulane Blacktop or, you know, all those, you know, some cheesy, some great, but they're definitely the tradition of road movies is pretty high.
I mean, as much as you always hate to have your own pictures taken away and replaced by someone else's, I'm wondering if you're thinking that The Forgotten Arm will at some point be up on the screen, because the soundtrack is, in effect, all there for a story.
Well, that would be amazing. I don't think that I'm the person to try to, you know, I mean, this
you didn't do
suggested.
That with that in mind. Yeah.
No, definitely not.
I'm wondering if when you write, you ever think of writing without the music, just writing a story, or
I'm just terrible. I'm a terrible writer. I just can't put sentences together. I mean, the great thing about writing a song is that, you know, 3 minutes and you're done. And you can tell, you can sort of paint a picture with pretty few details. But the art of writing a story or a novel is the art of intense observation. And I think I'm not that great at that.
Ooh, I'd quarrel with that. I think some of the observations you make in the song are really clever,
well,
really,
you know,
smart.
But I have, I mean, to write, the idea of writing dialogue and, you know, sort of remembering whole paragraphs of things that people say and that kind of, you know, I mean, I think I'm...
You're where you want to be writing songs.
Yeah. I like reducing. I like reducing a large, complicated thing into something more simple.
Amy Mann is here. Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. We're taking a call from Charleston, South Carolina. Greg's on the line. Hello, Greg.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm fine. Thanks for calling. What are you thinking?
Thanks for taking my call. I was actually thinking, as I'm listening to these songs and listening to the theme of the record, I'm thinking about a Lou Reed album from 1973 called Berlin, which sort of has a similar theme of a dysfunctional relationship, drugs play a part. I was just wondering if this had any influence in the writing of this record.
I don't know that record, no. It was a concept album?
Yeah, and it's really good, too. You should check it out.
Berlin is the name of the album.
I will.
It is sad, though. It's real depressing, but it's a good record.
Well, you know, that never bothered me before.
It's actually a little more fun if something dark is there. I mean, there's nothing in any of the 12 songs that sounds like Karen Carpenter was sneaking into your mind here. And, you know, I don't know. I can't even think of the names of their songs, and that's probably a good thing. But there always has to be a little shadow there, doesn't there?
For me, it's conflict is what makes things interesting. And you know, also, it's just, like, I mean, to me, that's kind of the reality of relationships. I mean, not to say that they're all, like, terribly dysfunctional. Like, obviously, if somebody having a serious drug problem, like, that's, you know, just about as bad as it could get. But I don't know. I mean, I think a lot of people kind of encounter that where, you know, they have a focus of obsession, or they're trying to find some sort of outside thing to make them feel better in some way. I don't know a single person who doesn't do that to some extent. And so to me, it just kind of rings true. And that's what keeps it from being sad, is that it's kind of true and there's a sweetness to it. And I don't know. I mean, I would like to think that sort of sweetness and compassion kind of comes through in the songs, but it's hard to say.
Do you patch it together from pieces of your own life, lives observed, imagination? Is it all a mix of that?
I think with this record, there's probably two or three people specifically who went into certain details that I had for the character of John. The character of Caroline comes from more just kind of the archetypical what happens in those kind of relationships. And, you know, I mean, there's obviously some of me in there and on both sides. But I have a lot of a lot of friends who also struggle with relationships with people. You know, a friend of mine, his father's a crack addict, and another friend, his mother's an alcoholic, and so I'm very familiar with that sort of struggle, loving somebody who's killing themselves. Like, it's, you know, and I think those relationships do take on kind of a typical shape.
Songwriting with Amy Mann on The Connection today, 1-800-423-TALK. To Portland, Maine, Terry's joining us. Hey, Terry.
Hi. Amy, I got turned on to you by a songwriter named Sonia from Disappear Fear, and I'm just wondering who it turns you on, like what other writers have influenced you?
Elliot Smith, I'm a huge fan of his, and I think earlier on, like, obviously people like the Beatles, and I was a huge fan of Elton John very early on.
Are there contemporary songwriters right now that...
Well, I think Fiona Apple is great, although she hasn't had a record in a long time. It's kind of hard for me to really keep up with music because there's so much stuff out there, and I can't. It's like it's hard for me to sort through it.
Do you make it a point to say, I need to hear more of what's being produced, not only necessarily to know what the competition is up to, but to hear what other people are doing? Or does that bother you that much if you're not listening to...
Well, it doesn't... it doesn't really bother me, and also I don't want to be unduly influenced. You know, if there's something that I really, really like, later on when I'm trying to write my own songs, bits and pieces of it will come up, and I, you know, and I'm always afraid that I won't necessarily recognize that and be able to put an end to it. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's possible for me to sort of subtly rewrite somebody else's song. And so I think it's probably better to just have my own music and like running on that loop in my head.
Do you have any kind of an attachment to sort of the ballad genre, the folk ballads, the stories where, you know, star-crossed lovers fall apart and someone gets shot because she's mistaken for a swan or stuff like that?
You know, I used to listen to that a long, long time ago. I was interested in that stuff, but it's not so much anymore.
So it's somewhere in the DNA, but it's not...
Yeah. It gets buried and then sort of filtered back.
What about people writing stories, novels? Do you find that anything of your own writing skill comes from what you read or writers who influence you, if we're not talking necessarily about songwriters?
Probably, but that's also hard to know how that really plays out. You know, there's a certain style of writing that I really like, which is just like a more flat kind of, like, I like writers who just get out of the way, and I try to do that in songwriting also, like, to keep it kind of colloquial and conversational, but to sort of get out of the way of the story.
Connection listeners, are you listening to the lyrics these days? Does that matter to you? Is it an important part of the music that you're listening to? We're at 1-800-423-8255. I want to go back to the disc The Forgotten Arm and jump a song ahead to one called Little Bombs. Do you want to tell us a bit about this before we hear some of it?
Little Bombs is, there's actually a couple of songs where I sort of picture the character of John now really isolating himself and sort of going from place to place.
Still addicted or cleaning it?
Yeah, no, still addicted and getting worse. I mean, the more the isolation increases, the more the drug addiction increases, and he's just starting, you know, he's holed up in a hotel and just having that feeling of, you know, having all the life drain out of him.
From the 22nd floor, walking down.
Called Little Bombs from Amy Mann's new concept album. It's called The Forgotten Arm, and I'm trying to think of a way of asking you this question so it doesn't sound stupid, but it probably will anyway. When you're sitting in here talking to me, I hear exactly the same voice that I hear mm-hmm. on the songs. It's like you turn from talking to me with that microphone to singing mm-hmm. on another one. Is it something that just happens, or is it a conscious thing that you...
It's kind of more the idea of staying out of the way of the song and not having a separate, you know, I mean, like, I'm a voice telling the story, and I don't really, you know, I don't want it to be more than that. I want to, you know, just to stay out of the way of the story and
because you have this little
words.
Dial called performance, and you could crank the performance way up, but you choose not to do that.
Yeah, that's not really my thing. I mean, I find it, you know, other singers, like, that's the sort of showboaty singers, like, I find that really distracting. And there's almost like an aspect of when I feel that a singer is like trying to like fake pump, like pump up the emotion or you know, it's, and it just sounds like kind of phony to me sometimes. And I sort of feel like no, tell the story, and then I'll feel like what the writer wanted me to feel, or you know, like it's I want to know what the writer felt. I don't really want to know what the singer feels about what the writer felt.
So it's more the writer than the singer talking to me then. One of the reviews that I read of the new album referred to your presentation as a kind of deadpan eloquence. And I thought, that's not bad.
Yeah, it's pretty deadpan. I mean, it's probably a little more deadpan than I would like. Like, I mean, it's sort of, you know, like part of that is just the way I sing too. But like, I probably would like to have just like a little, maybe a little more muscle in my voice. But, you know, that is sort of just how it turns out too.
Let's go back to our phone lines. 1-800-423-8255. Amy Mann is here to Buffalo, New York, and Martin's with us. Hey, Martin.
Good morning.
Thanks for calling.
Thanks for taking my call.
Go ahead.
Oh, being unfamiliar with Amy's music and hearing it for the first time today, I was caught by the voice, the style. It sounds so unforced and natural.
Can I test something with you? A road test, a little something that we're talking about here, Martin? Does it make it easier for you to listen to what she's singing about?
It seems like it, yeah. In a way, you know, it makes me want to listen to it, for sure. And I know you're talking about lyrics, but I haven't had a chance to really track them, but I'm going to try to. And I wanted to ask Amy if she uses the guitar while she composes.
Yeah, definitely.
Do all composers do that?
Yeah, I sort of have to sing and play at the same time.
Uh-huh.
And
does that mean that the lyrics and the music come at the same time, or you've sort of got an idea of what the melody is before the lyrics come, or
It sort of happens all at the same time. If I'm playing a chord progression, then I start, you know, singing a little melody. I'll sing some kind of words, and you know, generally, if I'm lucky, there'll be a sort of a topic or a thing I want to sing about or think about or whatever, and it's just kind of thinking out loud, and I just, you know, while you're doing it, you might as well sing a little melody along with it, and the melody's kind of dictated by the words, and you know what I mean, like, I don't know, like if like your microphone's on, and like, I mean, if that's like the sentence, you know, your microphone is on, like that dictates a meter right there, and like your microphone's on, you know, like it just kind of like partly writes itself.
We'll now all watch for that lyric at some point in the later song. Your microphone's on. I'm wondering if in that whole sort of composing part of the concept album, you begin with, oh, I got to get these guys back together, or I gotta get to another part of the story, or if it all just ends up being stitched together after the fact.
A little bit, you know, because it's not really a hard and fast plot.
Yeah.
I mean, I arrange the songs more or less in like a chronological order, and there are a few songs like Little Bombs is, you know, one of those songs where, you know, he's stuck in a hotel room and he's just looking out the window, seeing life kind of bustling around him while he's, you know, separated from it. And that, I mean, that could happen at various points. So it doesn't, you know, a song like that, maybe it doesn't really matter where that happens. That's just his internal, you know, internal state. But more or less, like, I tried to arrange them in a chronological order. And I did have a song that was a happy ending where it's sort of somewhere down the line where they kind of reunite and have this sort of nice, just like this nice encounter. And it's sort of open-ended. I mean, the one thing I do wish I had sort of more time for was how do they both get from like the worst part to the happy ending? And that I can't tell you.
Why?
I don't know. Maybe it's beyond me to sort of see the scope of like somebody else's recovery. I don't know.
Leave a little mystery.
Yeah.
Let us do some of the work. Singer-songwriter Amy Mann is my guest this hour. A little bit more of Little Bombs here, and a chance for you to join us. We're at 1-800-423-8255, and we're talking about storytelling using songs this hour. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection.
Inside a sound, the Lenox Hotel. Inside a sound, the Lenox Hotel.
I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Connection. Amy Mann is here with me in the studio. We're listening to some of her music, some of the songs from her new disc, The Forgotten Arm, talking a little bit about songwriting, storytelling. Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. You're welcome to join us here. Should we listen to a little bit more of this? Should we go straight to the caller? That, in fact, is from Magnolia, and if you go through Amy's music, you don't find many instrumental pieces, so we thought we'd use that one. Let's go to Fort Knox, Kentucky, for a call from Chris. Hey, Chris.
Hey, how are you doing?
I'm fine. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hey, I wanted to answer the question you guys brought up about what was more important to you, the tone and the music,
yeah,
and the vocals of it, and I really kind of thought that the one puts you in tune to listen to and accept the other, and I guess to go further, one of the reasons I'm a big fan, and I've been a big fan of Amy Mann since I heard her in the Magnolia soundtrack, the thing that she could do was she could pull all of your fears and emotions out of the place that you hide it inside yourself and place it in front of you for you to confront. And I think it's a beautiful thing. I really am a big fan, so...
Well, I think, thank you so much. I mean, I think for any songwriter, that's exactly what you want to hear from people. I mean, that's exactly, because the music that I really like, that of other people's, that's what it does for me. And, I mean, I think that you're right. I mean, as a listener, it's for other people that, you know, I mean, the lyrics are very important, but the music has to put you in the right emotional frame of mind. And I always think of the music as the subtext to the story that I'm telling. And if the subtext is, I mean, the subtext is really important. You know, in interviews, sometimes I get asked, like, well, you know, why are the lyrics sort of depressing, but the music's kind of cheerful? I'm like, well, because they go together. Like, that's the subtext is that there's, like, a lightness and a sweetness to it. And, you know, so it's like, that's why I never think of my music as that depressing.
Certainly. Do I have time to ask one more question?
Go for it.
Okay. You were talking a moment ago about other, you know, listening to other people's music, and there's another female vocalist that I almost group in the same category with you because she sort of evokes the same feelings, and that's Beth Orton, and I wondered if you had ever listened to any of her music or if you compared yourself to her at all.
I know just a little bit of her stuff. I mean, just every now and then I hear something on the radio, so I'm not really that familiar with her stuff, but I'll check it out.
I've got one quick one for you, Chris. He's gone. I've lost him. All right.
Bye, Chris.
I'll ask you what I was going to ask him, though. When you succeed at doing what Chris just said you succeed at doing with him, which is basically taking the emotions out that we all have a hard time finding the words for, framing them in a way that allows us to reconsider them, think about them in personal terms, is it meant to be kind of a wrenching experience or an intimidating experience? Are you...
Well, that's certainly... definitely not intimidating. I mean, it's not... You know, I mean, I have to say, like, it's not meant for anything except for me. That's just like a thing that for me is fun to do, or it's meaningful to me to do it. And I mean, I only sort of think about then recording and putting out a record later, you know, like mostly when I write. I mean, there's a lot of songs I write and then I go like, well, I'll just write this for me and like never play it for anybody because, you know, maybe nobody would relate to it or whatever.
Are there many of those?
For almost everyone, like almost every song gets written like that, where I go like, oh, this is way too sort of deep or weird or, you know, depressing or weird or strange or you know,
about me and not about other people.
Yeah, where you think it's sort of too specific to your situation or too dark or, you know, whatever, or it's goofy or, you know. So, I mean, I think that's how you have to approach it, to allow yourself to just write whatever you really do feel like writing. But I do think music is this amazing thing where it, I mean, I know this sounds weird, but like I have it sometimes when I'm writing my own stuff, where, you know, or listening to somebody else, where it sort of makes you realize you're feeling something that you didn't realize you were feeling. And, you know, you suddenly do have this surge of feeling that that wasn't really conscious, but as soon as you feel it, you're like, yeah, that's exactly how I feel like right now. And that often happens when I write, where I'll come up with a line and then suddenly it'll be this very, you know, like kind of upsetting experience, you know, where I'm like, I didn't even realize I was upset. I mean, it's definitely a double-edged sword, because I don't really always want to, you know, be in that state of mind where I'm, you know, sometimes it's, I was like, well, I thought I was in a good mood, but maybe not.
That's a pretty reflective exercise, yeah, then, too, when you're doing the composing.
Yeah.
Let's go back to our college, to Hopkinton, Massachusetts. Barbara's on the line. Hi, Barbara.
Hi. I'm such a big fan of your music, Amy, and what you just said reminded me of a songwriter once quoted to me about an author, and I forget which author it was, but they said that they write to find out what they're thinking.
Yeah.
You know, and it sort of reveals itself to you as you're involved in the process. And my question to you about your process is, I've loved your records since Till Tuesday records, and I just love the sound of them in addition to the songwriting.
Well, thank you.
I'm wondering, there was a period of time when there were a lot of angry, sort of disgruntled relationship songs, and maybe even some of what was going on with your career, with like angry at labels and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering if now that your life is happier and you're more settled in the relationship and doing so well with your career, do you think maybe that's why you've turned to story songs a little bit more, because it's kind of turning your look outwards to the world and writing about characters? And I'm just wondering, as a songwriter myself, if you find sometimes when you're happier that you're turning outwards for inspiration maybe more?
There were songs that I wrote, I don't know. I think it's probably just, you know, kind of trundling along in life and sort of learning certain things. And then,
is it getting a little older, getting a little more comfortable in your skin, maybe?
You know, and also kind of realizing that to stay angry at people or situations is only doing yourself harm. And,
right,
you know, so, I mean, maybe it's just more...
But were the songs healing in that way, or therapeutic or whatever?
Yeah, also I think, like, maybe if you're sort of in a... You know, you're a little irritated and you're sitting at the piano. I mean, it's like, yeah, you know, you're going to write like the song about like how you're irritated, and it's not necessarily an expression of how, you know, what your life is like. But I mean, like I said before, you know, I do feel like conflict does make things more interesting. I mean, it makes songs more interesting. So,
yeah.
You know, the idea of sitting down and kind of writing a song about like how things are great, it's like, that's a one line song. Things are great. Like, woo, good. Let's go to Starbucks.
That other caller brought up, the maybe some lyrics that are insightful or maybe depressing on some note, but the music is uplifting. Like that song, Little Bombs, that when you played that before, that I haven't gotten that new record yet, but I was like, wow, what a interesting feeling that gives me with the two different things going on. So that's great
that you're able to mind that conflict.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks for your call, Barbara. Sure. I want to go back to conflict on a different level, because just before we started the program, we were talking about your new affection for the sport of boxing.
That's right. Well, I obviously had a more... I'm having a better experience than your first experience with boxing, which, as you were saying, was... strapping on the gloves at 7 years old and you're having your 11-year-old friend hit you in the nose.
Yeah, that was the end of my boxing career. And there's a link to the forgotten arm. The forgotten arm is a boxing term. What's it mean?
Well, I have a friend who's a boxer, and part of the character of John is based on him, and he's a drug addict also, and but he's also sort of, you know, that has a bit of the carny in him, and he was showing me a boxing move, and so he always has these kind of inventive names for his boxing moves, and the forgotten arm was one of his. I mean, I don't think anybody else would use that.
So this is basically, if you're wailing away with your right arm, your opponent at some point is going to forget that you have the left, and
especially if you have him on the ropes, it's sort of misdirection. I think it's also the kind of thing that, you know, that he... My guess is it's more applicable in a situation with maybe not like two skilled boxers. Like maybe ways of confusing somebody in a contest who doesn't really know what they're doing.
Why do you like to box?
I don't know. I mean, it's a lot of it's interesting. Like it's a lot of there's a lot of different things to it. I mean, it's a very complicated sport, and so I find that really fascinating, that it looks like it's simple. And it looks exactly like what it isn't, which is, I mean, it looks like just two guys hitting each other. And what it really is like there's a lot of maneuvering and strategy, and like it's almost more like chess than it is any other sport. And it's really more a sport of the skill of not getting hit and keeping your wits about you and staying focused under duress.
Do you fight men, women, either?
I spar with there are a couple of sparring classes, and there's a little private gym I go to, and there's some sparring classes, and like whoever shows up. I mean, there's not that many people in this place really who like to spar as much as I do, but there's guys, and you know, there's like a 6'2", 18-year-old kid, and with a great fast hook, and you know, there's a two or three or women who show up pretty regularly.
Do you get hurt?
I've been a black eye. That's about it. I mean, because we're working on skills, we really try to take our power off their punches. So it's not, you know, so nobody's like trying to really rely on power and working on finesse more.
Here's the thing about a songwriter who boxes, and the word that I kept coming back to in my mind is emotion. I mean.
Mm-hmm.
Boxing or fighting, if we can call it fighting, and you stay away from that term. I know she's
sparring, not fighting.
But like, there's passion in that, or mm-hmm. there is always passion associated with that. There's or anger or, but
yeah, you can't get angry. I mean, if you get angry, you're sort of screwed because you start to lose your. I mean, you really do. You have to just keep. You have to watch. I mean, you just have to watch for your opportunity, and you have to stay focused, and you can't really take it personally that people are trying to hit you. Which I find, I mean, you know,
that's a little strange. No.
But you know what? It's like, but that's life. I mean, people are always trying to hit you in one way. You know, like whether it's the guy who like honks at you because right. he thinks you're trying to steal his parking place, or you know, like it, like there's a lot of little blows that happen in life, and you can't take it personally. Like even if it sort of seems like it's meant personally, it's still like in a lot of ways it isn't. And I just, it's easier to just, you know what, slip the punch.
1-800-423-8255. Amy Mann is here with me, and we're going to East Providence, Rhode Island. Tim's on the line. Hi, Tim.
Yes, hello. How are you?
Fine. Thanks for calling. What are you thinking?
Well, one, it's a fantastic chance to actually talk to Amy briefly. Hello, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Well, great. And I just wanted to tell you, you said a while ago that you thought you weren't a very good writer. Well, I'm here to say you're a marvelous, you are a fantastic writer because you really have this way of being compact, precise, and intimate all at once. And I was first introduced to you, your music, by things like Lost in Space, Bachelor Number 2, and it's wonderful because you have the capacity to heal and gain self-insight at once. I've never seen anyone be able to do that.
Thank you so much.
Well, I really feel that way.
And I read the same quote that you did, Tim. At some point in an interview a while back, Amy saying, oh, I'm not a very good writer.
Well,
What's that about?
A prose writer. I can't write prose to save my life. I mean, well, I can't even write emails.
prose is only one style, but my favorite song is your song called Invisible Ink. What a lyric. And it's the kind of song where I find something.
What's the line that sticks with you, Tim? Have you got it in your head?
Oh, absolutely. Let me see. Something gets lost when you translate. And how's the rest of it go, Amy?
Something gets lost when you translate. It's hard to keep straight. Perspective is everything.
Thank you. Perspective is everything is the line I was trying to come up with.
I usually can't remember my own lyrics.
The last thing I was going to do was misquote your own work to you, so I thought I'd ask. But just fantastic, and please, and I also saw you in Boston several years ago. It was a free concert, and you know, in short, you keep doing what you're doing because very few writers have any import. And one last thing I wanted to say is that you also introduced your style of singing. I love the fact that you're not forced. Your style is not at all forced, and it seems to imply the subconscious. And the spirit, and once again, no artist can know how he or she does what they do. But you are bringing something of enduring value, and thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much.
How do you know?
What a great thing to hear! I mean, that's so great.
Well, I think you probably got a lot of people who feel the same way. I'm wondering what your judge is of a song that really works. When do you know that? Oh, that's one that I really like. Is it something completely emotional, something that you can't find the words to describe, or is there a way of saying, no, this in this case, I've got it. I found one.
I think what it is that I have an emotional template, and when I get a story or a setup, and have some lines that, you know, and sometimes it's not necessarily a story; it's more describing a mood. But there's an emotional template, and then when I feel like it's the story kind of matches the emotion of it, and you know, hopefully there's a few lines in there that that have some, you know, images that are evocative and that I think are going to put people in the same kind of emotional place I am, then I feel like I've done my job. And you know, and sometimes there's a bit of this is about as good as it's going to get too. You know, you can't really keep hammering at it and expect it to change that much.
I want to close the show, if I can, with one more song from The Forgotten Arm. And so if we do that, that means before we listen to it, I want to take this moment to thank you for coming in and talking about your music.
Well, thank you so much. This was fun.
Your songwriting. And I'm going to give you the last word in setting us up for I Was Thinking I Could Clean Up for Christmas, because while we talked about The Forgotten Arm having kind of a happy ending, this is the song before the last
song.
Yeah,
this is the song before the happy ending. And this is a song that really is that my friend, my boxer friend who I was referring to before, this was taken almost directly from a conversation that I had with him when he had relapsed and he had been on a pretty bad run for about 3 weeks. And he had clearly did not have a lot of hope that he could ever get sober and stay sober, and he was going to try to clean up just to have Christmas with his family and then go out again. And it was, you know, a very, very despairing conversation and very disturbing to have that conversation. And and then shortly after that he went into rehab, and I think he stayed clean about 9 months. So, you know, at the point where he was kind of safely in rehab, then I was able to write the song. But, you know, I don't think I could have done it otherwise.
I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection, and this is the voice of Amy Mann.
I was thinking I could clean up for Christmas.